So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
I remember when I held you as an infant. I remember you growing up. I remember you, your first bicycle ride. I remember your all your little dance recitals and your graduations. And now you're throwing it all away. That's what you're going to do.
I will not quit. Not now. Not ever.
Why would you do this to me? Do you have any idea how this is going to affect me?
We don't have to have this match.
Oh, yes, we do. You know why we do? Because you become a disrespectful little bitch.
Daddy, you're a silly.
Never thought that my father would ever put his hands on me.
I will strike down the face of defiance.
I know that I can't back down.
You want me to take Daddy's little girl and crush her in my hand and throw it on the mat and leave it a bloody pulp?
I love you, Daddy.
When I look in my face.
Welcome to another edition of Review Away with John Pollock and Wei Ting. Mr. Ting, No Mercy 2003 today. Was this a nice stroll down memory lane as you watched this entire thing last evening?
Yeah, I did.
You did this in one sitting.
I know, and it was very difficult.
I never do it in one. I can't.
It had been a while since I had to watch one of these long pay-per-views in one sitting. And it was very difficult. I fell asleep multiple times. Not because it was a bad show, but maybe simply because I was so tired. You know, like you come home from work, and the last thing you want to do is sit through a 3-hour pay-per-view. There's a reason why these are on Sundays, I suppose, when people don't have to work, you know?
That's an excellent point, which they have not learned for 3-hour editions of Raw. Though, I will say, going back and watching a 3-hour edition of Raw, it's closer to 2 hours, really, when you cut through commercials and this. I mean, yeah,
this. I mean,
pay-per-views are long.
Yeah, well, because maybe it's just because I'm conditioned to 3-minute matches. That when I'm presented with a 20-minute match, I just cannot keep my attention, cannot keep my focus.
Well, we got lots of stuff to get to today, Wei. We have 5 pages of feedback.
5 pages. Well, you. This is pretty large font. It's like size 12 font. And some of it's bolded.
Well, most of it's copy and pasted right from Facebook. It is a... I also have to be mindful of eyesight as well. You don't want it too small.
That's true.
So let's get into it, Wei. No Mercy from 2003. October of 2003 in Baltimore, Maryland.
I've never seen the show before, by the way.
You have not.
This was during a time when I pretty much stopped watching wrestling for a bit after towards the end of early 2003.
This was when you and I had just started at the Radio and Television Arts program at Ryerson University.
That's correct.
Yeah, October 2003.
Before you worked for the law or during?
This was right around when I started. This would have been right around that time period.
I ask because, again, this was one of the classic John Pollock VHS tapes, complete with a custom printed label.
Yeah, this was about the end of that phase, I think.
John Pollock went through all the trouble of hooking up his little inkjet printer and printing out a logo of the No Mercy 2003 logo in color. Then he cut it in perfect 90 degree angles and used his little glue stick or whatever and glued little logos onto the VHS box.
You laugh, but if I had to go through each tape every week, I would be so angry if I had not labeled these things. Not to mention, labeling it simply No Mercy 2003 would mean nothing to me if I didn't know what was on this. I don't know what the fuck was the main event in 2003.
Well, I'm very thankful, and all the listeners...
You got to remember, this was a pre-Wikipedia world, okay?
That's true.
This was pre-YouTube, okay, where you think, oh, 2003 No Mercy, just look it up. It wasn't as easy back in the day.
No. 2003, I guess, when you think of the year, it doesn't seem that long ago, but when you think of how much
has
happened.
Yeah.
The internet.
Almost 8 years ago.
The internet was only
no,
six
wait,
years
my
old.
My math is terrible here. It's almost 7 years ago. There we go.
7 years.
All right. enough of this looking back and making fun of me. We open up the show way with apparently Kevin Dunn enlisted in After Effects, because that's what we got here through the opening. A great opening here, mm-hmm. promoting the main event between Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon, ahead of anything. They had childhood photos of Vince with his little daughter Stephanie, yeah. and they even got sound effects of a little child saying, "Daddy, Daddy." It comes back with Vince calling Stephanie a little bitch.
And then you just hear a little girl respond.
I love you, Daddy. As a photo of Vince and Stephanie blows away.
Yeah.
Thumbs up right there.
Oh, fantastic.
This was so good.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, if they put this much effort into an actual, like, your world title match, God forbid people might have bought this show.
I don't know what it is, but no matter how bad the product becomes, the video team, the post-production video team always, always delivers a home run. No matter what, they can turn any of their shit into watchable, good storytelling.
That, right around WrestleMania time, holy Christ, were they doing some good stuff this year. They had that placebo video for The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. They mm-hmm. played it for 1 week, and then they went with a Johnny Cash song. And with all due respect mm-hmm. to Johnny Cash, that placebo video, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, if I was not watching wrestling regularly and I saw that, mm-hmm. probably would hook me to buy.
I read an article on the Apple website about you don't hear much about the post-production teams, but on the Apple website, if you maybe Google it, you'll find a short little article on the post-production team, and they just talk about the crazy amount of hours that this team works around the clock to turn around these little promos. You know, think of how much content they have to fill every week.
Not to mention that it's probably those elements that the average person consistently fast forwards through. Like,
yeah.
when the Raw rebound comes up that mm. they've cut within 3 days of mm. Raw airing,
mm-hmm.
always fast forward through it.
Mm.
It's probably the most important, the most time consuming work is like the first thing you fast forward through.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
So we then get a contrasting video of Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker, who will meet for the WWE title tonight in a biker chain match, Way's favorite.
Yes.
And this was very different from the I Love You Daddy video. And then we get into the show, Way. Michael Cole was so excited for this show. Like, he could not wait for this. He was so energetic. It's Michael Cole and Taz. Now, if you recall at this time, everyone, this was when they were doing brand-specific pay-per-views, and this was a SmackDown-only show. Which, as I realized this, started to groan at until I looked at the lineup, and this blows away most lineups that they would present today with both brands.
Yeah, I was actually, when I chose the show, I wanted to choose a Brock Lesnar show specifically, and I tried my best to look for the worst one, but then I would look at all the pay-per-views he was involved in, and none of them were really that bad.
You know? It was in the ring. The period Lesnar was there, like 2002 through 2004. He was only there 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a very solid roster.
Oh, especially on SmackDown.
Yeah, SmackDown was, especially that late 2002 period where mm-hmm. you had Heyman booking SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is probably the best 4 months SmackDown has ever been in their
yes.
history. It
yes,
was just
I agree.
Awesome. Every week was like match of the year candidates.
Yeah, I mean, you'd compare it to Raw that week, that time. I always remember SmackDown being the show to watch, whereas Raw, you'd have...
It was like so contrasting, because Raw would have like the HLA at
yeah.
that period of time, and it was just shit
yeah.
every week.
Yeah.
So we kick off with Tajiri against Rey Mysterio for the Cruiserweight Championship. 3 days ago, they shot an angle, this was on SmackDown, where Tajiri blew black mist into the eyes of Nydia, and Nydia may have lost her vision.
Permanently, yes. This wasn't green mist, it wasn't red mist either, but the
new dreaded black mist.
Mysterious black mist.
So, naturally, this leads to Tajiri not facing Jamie Noble on the pay-per-view. I was a little confused why they shot this big angle
yeah.
where the payoff would have been Jamie Noble wrestling here for revenge.
Yeah, perhaps they just wanted some victim for Tajiri's new black mist.
Early on, this match more resembled a K-1 style fight, as it was just each going for low leg kicks on one another. And then Michael Cole brought up that Tajiri learned kickboxing in high school. Did you have a kickboxing coach in high school in Scarborough?
I did not, but I was not raised in Japan.
That's true.
Who knows what they have over there? Crazy people.
Ray sells and then works up to hit a plancha over the top onto Tajiri. Tajiri works on the left arm of Mysterio. Ray sells and then comes back with a tornado DDT for a two count. Large chance of 619. Then we see a Hurricane Rana off the apron by Ray to Tajiri on the floor. Then Tajiri throws Ray into the ropes, and Ray comes back with a 619 into the gut of Tajiri. Hits a springboard West Coast pop into Tajiri, but Tajiri stops it and powerbombs Mysterio for a two count. The crowd was very much into this opening match. And then Ray ducks a Yakuza kick, hits the 619 with the West Coast pop, but a fan runs in Way and starts attacking Rey Mysterio, and the announcers could not be more convincing here that this was an angle by continuing to talk about this fan who turned out to be Ryan Sakota, and he was accompanied by Jimmy Yang. And while the referee is distracted getting rid of the fans, Tajiri kicks Mysterio in the head and pins him to retain the title. And Cole and Taz continue to talk about fans, and Cole notes that he will be prosecuted to the highest extent of the law,
yeah,
which means he would be killed.
They play a perfect replay angle of the fan walking right next to the camera guy. Camera guys don't change the camera or whatever. Anyway, so this was the debut of Akio and Sakota, the Yakuza friends of Tajiri.
Is that what they called them?
I mean, that's what they're trying to imply. You know,
they looked like the guys out of Kill Bill, which had just come out at this time. That's all.
Okay.
I think that's what it was modeled after.
Yes. But I just thought it was funny how they mistook two members of the Yakuza as fans.
Everyone knows the Yakuza just sit at ringside. Vince McMahon is backstage with a ridiculously young-looking Josh Matthews, who looks like he's right out of high school. And Vince McMahon proceeds to act like Chael's son in criticizing the first question Matthews asks. Vince notes that anyone in the business, not in the WWE, anyone in the business that interferes will never work for the WWE again or anyone else ever again. That means you get involved. You will not go to TNA. You won't go to Ring of Honor. You won't go to New Japan.
You won't go to McDonald's. You won't go to Kinko's. You will not work, period.
Ever. Again. They could not tell audiences more that there will be no run-in in this match at all. They then run down a tale of the tape for Lesnar and Taker. I enjoyed how on Lesnar's list of career accomplishments, his King of the Ring victory was listed ahead of becoming an NCAA champion.
But it's all one night, NCAA. That's all one night, too, I guess. They were really going for the realism build here with Taker versus Lesnar. And you know what? In this whole show, it seemed to me that they were going for realism, not only in the matches, but in the promotion and in the commentary, especially with Taz and Cole. Taz especially, I suppose this would be Taz's strength always in my eyes, is that he was able to provide a lot of good technical analysis where he would be able to explain moves and guys' motivations for doing certain moves. And in this show, it definitely came across like Cole were making a real effort to make this stuff seem real. What a novel idea.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And 15 months later, a show called Ultimate Fighter would debut, and that would be all for this company. Match number two, Way. A-Train takes on Chris Benoit.
What?
Large,
Who?
A-Train. A large chance of shave your back begin for A-Train, who, I don't know what it was about this guy, but it just seemed like every gimmick this guy was given, it was such a handicap for him. His first gimmick was Prince Albert, which for those who are not aware what a Prince Albert is, Google it, but don't blame us.
I feel as though if you only knew A-Train from this point forward, when they were finally taking him seriously as A-Train, as this intimidating big guy, he would have done a lot better. But he was so, his whole persona was so,
his name was stupid to begin with. Yeah, like, we probably maybe can accept it more because we don't live in New York, but imagine if this guy's name was like the Young Bluer line or something, like after a subway.
Well, I mean, the A-Train is not a New York-specific term. It's just it means Isn't it just a transit term that's worldwide?
That's New York is the only one I'm aware of that has like an A train, a B train, yeah. A C train.
But couldn't it just mean
he is the lead train of a subway system,
okay.
Regardless of its geographical location.
Anyway, the guy has a great look and in the ring, I think great physical charisma. He could be carried and work a decent match as you'll see in this match, but. Coming to the WWE at the very start as Prince Albert, and then being teamed with Test and TNA where he met nothing.
Oh yeah, he was TNA.
And then, of course, the X Factor. We all remember that. So
the highlight of his career.
Yeah, he's just in Japan. They did a really good job with him. And,
Giant Bernard.
Yeah, you can see right now he's super over.
Michael Cole mentions that Stu Hart died this past Thursday, and that kind of did set up the story of this match. Going into this, they explain that A-Train has learned how to avoid the German suplex, how to avoid the crossface, and apply the crossface himself. So they're trying to say that Benoit has no answers for this man. A-Train attacks the neck of Benoit, which they brought up he had surgery on in 2002. Benoit received a cut on the bridge of his nose and then later had a bloody mouth. See a butterfly suplex into A-Train's knee, which was a cool-looking spot. Headbutt by A-Train, and Taz notes that he put a lot of head... That's a lot of head to butt. A lot of head to butt. Cole knocks... this was the best line, as there was a bit of blood on Benoit's nose. Michael Cole notes, "This isn't a heavyweight boxing match. No blood stoppages in here in the WWE."
Hmm.
Ha ha ha. Benoit uses the crossface, but A-Train powers out and hits a German suplex. A-Train then hits the Baldo Bomb for a two count. Then a running kick into a chair in the corner leads to a leg sweep by Benoit, and then he applies the sharpshooter for the win as a tribute to Stu, and also continues with the story that he could not beat A-Train with the crossface.
Hmm.
So this was, amazingly, 6 months after this, Chris Benoit would be in the main event of WrestleMania, winning the world title. And yet on this SmackDown pay-per-view, he was second match in working with A-Train.
Yeah. Yeah, it was surprising. I thought it was a good match.
Yeah, it was fine.
Am I allowed to say that?
I don't care what you say. I'm not going to deny the guy had good matches. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
You know what I noticed? Money in the Bank DVD... They have the Chris Benoit... what is it? Elimination Chamber. They have a Chris Benoit match on that Elimination Chamber DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they do. I was looking at the match list, at least. I wonder how they're going to handle that.
Well, I think they've decided that for compilation DVDs and stuff, they're going to leave them in there. Like, when they came out with the SummerSlam box set a few years ago, they kept his in, especially that... 1 year he headlined here in Toronto.
Right.
I don't see it being a big deal for the WWE. I don't think the onus should be on them that they have to remove him from everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very costly on their part. It's like, and anyone who comes back and says the WWE is profiting off of Chris Benoit, fuck off.
No.
Yeah, they're putting Chris Benoit commercials together. Check out the DVD.
It's like that the Martha Hart argument right now with Owen. I don't know the specifics about it, but just looking at it at face value, it does not seem like a real case.
Well, if she hasn't been paid for any of these DVDs, then she absolutely has a case.
Yeah.
But
is that part of the agreement? Anytime
well, she
Owen
claims
appears?
She hasn't been paid for any of the DVDs he's appeared on.
Okay.
So that's a ton of royalty.
But that was part of the agreement at the end, the settlement with the lawsuit. Anytime Owen appears on one of their DVDs, she has to get paid for it.
Well, that's standard for any WWE performer, whether you're with the company or not.
Really?
Guys okay. today still receive, like anybody that's on a DVD, like that Elimination Chamber, every single person on there, whether you're in
so
TNA.
Zach Gowen would earn money from
absolutely.
This No Mercy DVD.
Absolutely. If
really?
It was sold today. Yeah, everybody
I
still
know.
Gets royalties off of that. We're backstage, and Matt Hardy is looking for Shannon Moore, and he finds John Heidenreich, who I wrote down here as Nathan Jones. He's upset that Matt threw out his tryout tape that he had delivered to Matt. And at this point, John Heidenreich was doing a gimmick where he referred to something as Little Johnny, I guess to allude to his penis. And... It leads to Matt Hardy talking Heidenreich out of destroying Shannon and saying, no, 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 the tape I threw out was the best of Shannon Moore tape because there was nothing on it.
Yeah.
Hilarious that...
The Heidenreich was just terrible, and this whole stupid tape thing, like, what?
I don't remember any of this.
As good as the wrestling was, some of the backstage skits in this show, my God. My God, it definitely rivals... I would say even worse than what we see on Raw weekly.
We go to an ad for next month's Survivor Series where all of the WWE stars are playing football and they get into a big fight with all the football players, and it ends with Vince McMahon looking on from a limo and says, wrestling and football. Nah, it would never work. Mm-hmm. Very funny. Mm-hmm. Then we have Tony Chimmel, who acknowledges all the troops who are at the show tonight, stating that they're off to Iraq tomorrow. And they want to spend their last night here at a WWE pay-per-view. I don't know if I'd want to spend my last night at a WWE SmackDown pay-per-view.
Hmm. What would you do instead?
On a Sunday night?
What if it was a UFC show?
Oh, well, that would be the Saturday. I'd still have Sunday night free.
What if you were flying out on Sunday instead?
I think it would depend what the main event is for a UFC. I don't know. What would you do if you were leaving for... Iraq the next day.
I probably would also not go to... You know what? Maybe. I might. If it was this card and if I was a big SmackDown fan at this time, I would check this out.
I wouldn't have gone for this show. At least go to a bar with your friends or something.
You could do that after the show.
Not if you're leaving the next morning. Bars aren't open late in Baltimore on a Sunday night. What would you do, Review Away listeners?
On your last night before flying out to Iraq,
would you go to a WWE SmackDown pay-per-view? From there, we go to our next match. Zach Gowen and Matt Hardy. And this was when Matt Hardy had his Windows Media Player entrance, where it had random facts such as Matt Hardy cannot be grossed out, and Matt Hardy survived 5 car wrecks. I wonder if that's true. He was in 5 car wrecks. He didn't say car accident. Car wrecks.
Car wrecks. I don't know. I wouldn't doubt the first one. Matt Hardy cannot be grossed out. I really liked the entrances, and this was my favorite time of Matt Hardy's career when he did the whole version one thing and had his MFers and that stupid entrance.
I know that Matt has dealt with a lot of injuries over the past year. My God, was he in better shape here in 2003 than now. Like, you look at them, 2003 versus now. Holy crap.
Really, huh?
Big difference.
Just in mobility?
Size.
Yeah, size.
This match was all Hardy early on. He misses a moonsault. Gowen hits a top rope helo to the floor with one leg. This guy killed himself during this run.
Mm-hmm. When I first heard about Zach Gowen, when he was still in the independents, I just saw this photo of this one-legged wrestler who I heard was able to do, amongst other things, a one-legged hurricanrana.
This guy could do a ton of moves.
A one-legged figure four. And I thought it was hilarious. And then the next thing you know, he had a tryout with TNA, and then he got into the WWE.
Yeah, he was on some of the weekly TNA pay-per-views, and then the hilarious story at the time was that Vince McMahon instructed John Laurinaitis to go sign this one-legged wrestler. Mm-hmm. Laurinaitis went out and signed a one-legged wrestler who was not Zach Gowen.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing story.
Yeah, but Zach Gowen, his ability was very impressive, but how do you seriously book a one-legged wrestler against your other talent?
He was coming off his big program with Vince McMahon at this point, where they had a pay-per-view match together, and the build-up for that, I mean, depending on what your level of taste is, it was either Vince McMahon at his absolute best or his absolute worst, because it was so offensive to handicapped people.
Wow.
Like, he would walk around with a limp, like, as if he was Zach Gowen, and holy Christ.
This is par for the course.
It was wrestling, especially in 2003.
We get to see Vince McMahon beat up his own daughter later on in the show.
Yep, that's coming up. Hardy came back with a side effect, but then Gowen made his own comeback, and they were climbing the ropes, and Gowen shoved Hardy off the top, and Hardy landed in position, and Gowen hit a moonsault for the win, and I believe this was his first WWE victory, they played it up as. Mm-hmm. Then we see backstage Vince McMahon getting ready for his I Quit match with his daughter Stephanie, and Linda walks in. Linda McMahon, your Senate candidate for you residents and listeners in Connecticut. Vince makes some more changes to the match, saying that he can only win by submission, but he's making this no-holds-barred, allowing Stephanie to win by pinfall if she should decide, realizing that no one is going to buy any near falls in a submission match, being that it's I Quit. So, yeah, this made sense.
Hold on. What was the deal? What was the deal going into?
It was an I Quit match.
Yeah.
So, I guess they felt that why would someone go for a pinfall in an I Quit match? Mm-hmm. And to me, Stephanie, as a horrible, horrible wrestler, the only way you're going to get a babyface reaction to her are near falls. So, I think that makes sense to me. Why you would give... allow her to pin.
But why
you're going to get those near falls.
But in this little vignette, Vince announced that it was now a no-holds-barred match.
Because apparently I Quit matches are not already no-holds-barred.
Okay. But somehow in a no-holds-barred match, pinfalls are allowed?
For Stephanie.
Did he just announce this here? Because I completely missed that.
Yeah, that's what he announced here.
Oh, my God.
You got to pay attention.
So man. This was an I Quit match that was no-holds-barred... And pinfalls are only allowed for Stephanie.
Exactly. What? Come on. TNA booking here. Up next, we have a bonus match, Way. Bonus, meaning something complimentary to the card. Something that enhances your already paid-for value.
Mm-hmm.
The APA versus the Basham Brothers. The Basham Brothers come out to perhaps the worst theme music I've ever heard a team have. Oh, my God, was this bad. Their gimmick was that they were into fetish culture. That's what I read from this.
Mm-hmm.
They show a previous angle where the Bashams attacked the APA with chairs after the APA had taken out Shaniqua in an angle and Bradshaw delivered the clothesline from hell to her.
Did you see those chair shots?
They looked very unsafe. Cole mentions, we've talked about their sexual fetishes, but they're a hell of a tag team too. These two guys were like the cornerstones of Ohio Valley Wrestling in the early days, and if you saw any of their stuff down there, this is why Jim Cornette had high blood pressure at this point in his life, because if he ever watched this stuff, he would have been attacking his television set, and I don't think that's a stretch.
His babies were now being put into this sexual fetish tag team. I still can't tell the two apart. They looked exactly the same. Just what a disappointment for these two guys. You would hear so much hype about Damaja and then Danny Basham, and then they would come in as these two. What have they? Where are they now? What do they do now?
They're both out of the industry, as far as I'm aware.
Sad.
Lots of selling by Farouk, which is a rarity. We see the last call by Bradshaw, which was essentially the old Scott Hall move.
Fall away slam.
Yeah. That he delivered to Doug Basham off the second rope. We see a ref bump to Mike Sparks, and Bradshaw hits the clothesline from hell. Then Shaniqua runs in and attacks Bradshaw with a nightstick, and Doug Basham gets the pin. So the Bashams are victorious here with the help of the returning Shaniqua. Then backstage, Josh Matthews is with the Bashams and Shaniqua, and the Bashams are staring at Shaniqua's boobs
and
nearly having an orgasm here on pay-per-view.
This was one of the most perplexing, embarrassing promos I've ever seen while reviewing one of these shows for Review Away. Linda Miles cuts a promo basically saying, Bradshaw clotheslined me, but I'm okay. However, my boobs are not. They're swollen.
Because during this time off, she got a boob job.
She got a boob job. This is a promo about her new boob job.
They were caused by Bradshaw clotheslining her. She has permanent swelling on her chest.
Those are the exact words. We're not even trying to make fun of this.
No, this is seriously how they described it. And all four of these people on screen had to do this with a straight face.
The Bashams stare at her breasts, and then they ask if the swelling is permanent. And she's like, yeah, they're permanent. These grown adults, I feel sorry for these people.
Oh, my God. From there, how do you follow that? The Undertaker's keys to victory. which include the sage advice. Get the chain, throw in hands, throw in spelt without a G, and for Lesnar, his keys are also get the chain, grappler game.
What?
Grappler game.
Grappler game.
Doesn't that contradict one another? Get the chain and grapple? You can only do one. Can't grapple with them and still go for the
you
chain.
You can grapple with the chain.
Well, he has to get, I guess that's why they put it in order. But that and throwing hands.
Throwing hands.
Throwing hands.
Well, why would you have a G in thrown?
No, throw in. T-H-R-O-W-I-N. Not throwing. And why would you say past tense? It should be throwing hands, but they took off the G with and put an, a comma above.
Oh, throwing.
Yeah.
To be cool. Maybe they couldn't fit the font size.
Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon are up next in an I Quit, No Holds Barred match with only pinfalls allowed by Stephanie McMahon match. We get another video building up this feud where Vince McMahon, what a performer. This guy was just a fucking asshole in his character. Stephanie comes out with Linda in her corner. Linda could not look more wooden here. And then Vince McMahon comes out with his mistress, Sable. Mm-hmm. That's how she's identified, the mistress.
Yeah.
Who Cole says, flat out, Sable is a bitch. Vince McMahon looks absolutely insane here. Scott Putski Award winner this week. My God, this guy looked like he had his own zip code. Holy Christ, was he big.
Michael Cole says he is not proud to be calling this father-daughter I Quit match.
Yep. A little known fact, prior to this match, the Maryland State Athletic Commission notified the WWE that they do not allow male-on-female violence, and they would be fined if they went ahead with this match. The WWE said, okay. And they were fined the grand sum of $2,000 to put this match on. It starts with Vince attacking Stephanie. Sable slaps Stephanie, and this leads to Linda having to run. And I don't know if this was more funny than Mark Henry running a few weeks ago, but this was up there. We see a half crab by Vince, and Stephanie's yelling is just painful to hear. Sable throws a pipe. Linda attacks Sable, then slaps Vince, and then Stephanie comes at Vince with a low blow. See a near fall by Stephanie, which results in a huge pop. As much as you might criticize the booking of this match, this crowd was super hot for this match.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Stephanie gets the pipe and delivers shots to Vince. They get a near fall with Vince getting his foot on the ropes. Stephanie pushes Vince into Sable on the apron and then hits a shitty bulldog for a two count. Huge, huge crowd heat by this point. Then Vince uses the pipe to choke Stephanie with. And then Linda throws in the towel, ending the match. And an added stip on this match was that if Stephanie lost, she would no longer be the general manager of SmackDown.
That's right. A fact that I had no clue about until afterwards. But my question is, if Linda could just throw a towel to end it, why didn't she just do that at the beginning if she didn't want this match to happen?
Maybe she thought Stephanie had a chance. Maybe.
Ridiculous.
After the match, Vince pie-faces Linda to the floor. And Cole notes that after 37 years, Vince has never laid a hand on Linda. And Taz comes back with, that we know of. Teasing domestic disturbance between Vince and Linda.
You're candidate for a Republican, what is it, city council?
For the Senate way.
For the Senate, yes. Thank God for this, for the new PG rating.
God. There's this new group that's formed called Mothers Against McMahon that have formed. If they could get their hands on No Mercy 2003, my God, they'd have a field day.
The ammo that they have for their
Christ,
campaign.
This match alone. Cole and Taz start fearing for the fate of SmackDown, and Michael Cole was so disgusted at Vince's actions, he just goes off on a rant here on camera. He is so disturbed by what Vince has done in this match, choking his daughter with a pipe. And this was 1 week before Stephanie and Triple H would get married.
I gotta give him credit, though. This
heat for this match was huge.
Very hot for this. The crowd really cared about the outcome of this match for whatever reason.
Next up on Tapway, it's Kurt Angle versus John Cena, and they show the video of this match, and it featured guys dressing up, rhyming, and Angle tapping out to a midget.
Yeah, what had happened?
And he's a babyface.
This was confusing because I honestly knew who was the heel and who was the face, but I was slightly more confused after watching this preview. This was while John Cena was still his rapping character, his heel rapping character, and they had Kurt Angle come out, and he would rap, but mockingly, and then he would came out one SmackDown and dressed up as John Cena, and he welcomed Kurt Angle to come in, and it was a midget dressed up as Kurt Angle, and then.
So you had a segment where Angle was playing Cena and a midget was playing Angle.
Yes.
And then the midget tapped out the real Angle, who was not Angle but playing John Cena.
Yes, yes. But my gripe with it was that the midget thing, it's a real heel type of move. It's not something where that would make you want to cheer for a guy.
This was really bad, I thought, the buildup.
Maybe there's too much comedy here.
Way too much,
you know,
especially for a guy like Kurt Angle.
However, I found Cena tremendously entertaining back then. If you compare John Cena back then to John Cena now, John Cena was so funny. Like, adults were cheering John Cena. Imagine that.
I remember this rap gimmick very fondly as Cena being really creative and clever. Mm-hmm. However, going back here and listening to his rap, I thought it came across so fake and lame in 2010.
What, you didn't like when he said, I don't know. I forget.
If you want to see a joke, tell Angle to take his pants off. He doesn't suck. He swallows. Then he rhymes, makes me sick with get off my dick.
It's great.
Okay.
Hilarious.
Hey, at the time I thought it was great, but I just don't think this really stands the test of time, though you are much more an authority on rap music than myself, so if this passes with flying colors according to you, then I'll consider myself in the minority.
He is way better than The Miz impersonating R-Truth.
That guy forgot his lines midway through the rap. I'm just saying, that gimmick for Cena, though, it had a shelf life. He couldn't have done that forever.
True. I agree. So, but for the time, it was highly entertaining. And in terms of comedic value, John Cena back then...
And a key was he got to write his own stuff there. He didn't have these rhymes weren't scripted for him.
So if you're gonna if you were to criticize John Cena right now for his lack of his poor comedic delivery, the guy does have a great comedic side to him, as you could see from this period.
They start the match off with a close-up shot of Angle's gold medals in the corner. And then they transition over to Cena's corner, where he has put a lock and chain as they start the match. Very nice little subtle addition, because it would play into the finish. Right away, Angle ducks under Cena and then turns around and gives two middle fingers to Cena to start off the match. Kurt Angle, holy Christ, was he big here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had to have been 255 at this point, and he's now probably legitimately around 205. In TNA.
Yeah.
I think a much healthier Kurt Angle in TNA than he was at this point.
Dual
chance for both guys, which was pretty unique at the time. The let's go Angle, let's go Cena. Angle's mouth was busted open early from Cena, I guess delivering a potato to Kurt. Angle teases a German suplex off of the apron, but Cena counters with a DDT to the apron. This was a cool spot, and eventually I think Petey Williams actually delivered this to AJ Styles in TNA, where he German suplexed him into a metal guardrail in one of the craziest and dumbest spots I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the fact that no one remembers it is probably evidence to my statement. Cena hits a guillotine leg drop onto the neck of Angle. Then Angle returns with a German suplex series, and you can easily see Angle landing on his shoulder to the side as he would deliver these German suplexes. Then it built up to Cena hitting the FU for a two count. Then Angle came back with an Angle slam for a two count. Crowd was very much into this. Cena then grabbed his chain and was going to go punch Kurt, but the powerful Jimmy Corderas grabbed Cena's arm and stopped him from delivering the punch with the chain. I didn't care for that spot. And then Kurt came back and... So Corderas takes the chain from Cena, and then Cena takes Kurt's medals with Corderas distracted, and then hits Kurt with the medals for a two count. Great sequence into the finish with an FU attempt by Cena. Angle counters with a victory roll, and then into an ankle lock, and secures the tap out. This is probably John Cena's best match up to this point in his WWE tenure. And Kurt really carried things in this match. And they were trying to elevate Cena at this point. And I thought this match, even in losing, did a lot of good for Cena.
Absolutely. They were definitely planting the seeds for a face turn here. And it definitely worked with Cena working so hard to attain the victory, to try to attain the victory. And then the fans chanting, "Let's go Cena," throughout the match. I thought it was an excellent match. Best match of the night. And it's kind of hard to believe that, at least in ring, this is the same John Cena that we see today. Not that Cena's bad today, but I don't remember seeing him in a match this entertaining.
We then do a recap of Eddie Guerrero and Big Show, which is coming up next for the U.S. title. Wow. If you want to talk about the last build-up video having too much comedy, this feud, second from the top for the U.S. title, started with Eddie Guerrero giving Big Show a tortilla, which gave him the shits. So then Eddie came back with a giant truck full of human waste and sprayed Big Show with human waste with a giant extinguisher in the arena. So Big Show was covered with shit. And then Big Show got his revenge by chokeslamming Eddie onto one of his custom-made cars with non-gimmick glass that he put Eddie through. Eddie was bleeding all over his back and then was chokeslammed repeatedly on top of this truck, which when you realize how much damage Eddie's back was in during the last year of his life, God, this made me cringe.
Yeah, this was a tough...
I don't know, why would you not gimmick the glass? Like, you could see the shards of glass on his back, and his back was all cut up and bloody.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you give me the glass? Because these guys are tough? I don't know. Because it would cost too much.
So that
meanwhile,
leads us...
a truck full of shit, can get those easily.
Yeah, of course. Eddie Guerrero defending the U.S. title against the Big Show. Early on, Eddie tosses a chair into the ring to distract the ref as he grabs a garbage can lid from underneath the ring to hit Big Show with.
And Michael Cole says, "Isn't Eddie Guerrero smart for using this tactic?" Meanwhile, John Cena does the exact same thing in the last match, and Cole condemns Cena for doing so. Where's the double standard? Why?
Very hypocritical. At this point, Viewer's Choice Canada ran a scroll for a contest to win a copy of WWE Raw 2 on Xbox, and all you had to do was enter in the secret code word, Snowskate.
Snowskate.
What I don't know what tie-in that is to wrestling, but Snowskate was the secret word.
Snowskate. Was that a video game?
I don't know.
Okay.
Snowskate.
Did you ever try to enter one of these contests?
No.
Viewer's Choice contest?
No. Show works on the back of Eddie, and then he actually gets on top of Eddie's back with a choke that Taz calls a version of the rear naked choke. Looked very terrible in execution.
It was a rear chin lock. Cole, in a previous match, they were calling all the rear chin locks rear naked chokes, but Cole at one point called it a naked choke.
That could have been Midian's finisher.
Naked choke.
Yes. This is all Eddie selling, and then he has a comeback for a near fall. Show leg drops the referee when he misses Eddie in a funny looking spot. Eddie grabbed brass knuckles, and then a belt shot, along with a frog splash. All of this hit on Big Show, but Show still kicks out. Then a spine buster by Big Show for a two count. Hits a choke slam on Eddie, but Eddie gets his foot on the rope to break the count. Then Eddie comes back on offense, walks into a second choke slam, and this time Big Show gets the win. I thought a real bad time to be beating Eddie Guerrero because he was gaining so much steam at this point, I thought.
I suppose so, but weren't they moving the U.S. belt off of him to gear him for the world title? Wasn't that the reason?
I guess he had to get it off of him, but at the same time, I mean, it was just, to me, it was, this match, I thought Eddie was booked just as any other guy.
I found it very odd. I know his whole face character was the whole lying, cheating, and stealing thing, but I thought some of the cheating was counterproductive at times. You can tell the crowd is kind of confused. They weren't really cheering when he was doing all that face, baby face cheating. You just have this momentum throughout the match where Eddie is the underdog, and then he is suddenly cheating to beat the Big Show, who's been wrestling a fair match. I don't know.
Then Chavo Guerrero appears in the ring all of a sudden. He's upset at Eddie for losing. So they're teasing dissension between Los Guerreros. Backstage, Josh Matthews, wearing a leather jacket, an earring, and gelled-up hair, runs after Big Show. Horrible promo here by Big Show, where he just kept yelling, I told you so, as he's the new U.S. champion. And that leads us away to the main event between Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker in a biker chain match for the WWE title. They show a video leading up to this match, including Zach Gowen being thrown down steps in a wheelchair by Lesnar, which looked very painful.
And another unprotected chair shot.
That's right.
Onto The Undertaker.
The Undertaker makes his entrance, and Michael Cole introduces him, stating, here comes the WWE's conscience.
Really?
The WWE's conscience. There's a marketable t-shirt. Okay. Taker makes this match.
Not the WWE's conscious?
Well, not right now. He's not conscious. He's in a vegetative state. They show in the build-up for this, Undertaker just comes into the ring and tells Brock Lesnar that they're having a match for the WWE title, with Vince McMahon just watching on. So Taker, apparently the WWE's conscience slash booker. And I was curious what the difference is between a chain and a biker chain. Way, were you able to find out?
I always thought a biker chain would be the chain that you use in the motorcycle.
Maybe to lock up your bike?
No. But the chain in the gears. The chain in the actual bike.
Oh, that chain.
But it was not that type of chain. No, it wasn't. Just one of those steel link chains.
Yeah, that John Cena wore.
Yeah. I thought it was the same chain.
They should have marketed these things. Could have sold biker chains.
Biker chain match.
They placed the chain on a very high pole. You didn't have to grab the chain to win the match. It was there if you needed it.
Yeah.
That was the biker chain match. It's a regular match, and if you want to grab this chain, you can.
You didn't even have to use the chain if you didn't want to.
No, you didn't. But that being said, they worked this whole match around grabbing that chain and made it seem the focal point of the match, I thought was good.
But the question is, can you get disqualified if you use another weapon instead of a biker chain in a biker chain match?
I would guess that would be an issue, potentially. It's a biker chain match. No holds barred.
What if John Cena's chain happened to be left at ringside? Can you grab his chain?
That would be in dispute, because I think you'd see that the official chain is still hanging from that pole. Okay. This match, hell froze over about 4 minutes in when Taker went for a La Magistral cradle.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked.
Undertaker was, he's always been a big MMA fan, has he not?
Yes.
So maybe he was going through his technical wrestling phase and
La Magistral cradle has never been used in an MMA battle.
Well, I mean watching.
Maybe he's been watching CMLL at this point.
He was working the arm a lot during this match, so it made sense to go for that move.
Taker goes for the chain, but the lights go out, and Michael Cole nonchalantly just cites generator problems in the arena. Yeah, that's it. Lesnar throws the steps into the ring. We see a pile driver spot by Taker onto Lesnar on the steps. I don't know if I'd be crazy about taking that.
It was fairly safe. It could have been very dangerous, but from the angle that they shot it in, you can clearly see Brock was very protected.
Undertaker applies the WWE version of the triangle choke with no arm in from behind Lesnar. Lesnar can't reach the chain, and Taker tries to stop him from grabbing the chain with a last ride attempt, but Lesnar counters. Taker then goes for another triangle armbar attempt, which is I found amusing in this match, because the story was Taker was using all this MMA against Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Lesnar was the fish out of water here. Couldn't counter this MMA bullshit from The Undertaker. I'm a wrestler. Dragon Sleeper was countered by Lesnar.
Wait, hold on. You missed the spot. So Taker had Brock in the triangle choke, and then Lesnar lifts Taker up while still in the triangle choke and powerbombs Lesnar. And for sure, Quentin Jackson was watching this fight.
That's right.
Because in Pride, in 2004, he used the same finish. 2004, Critical Countdown 2004. He used the same finish, exact same finish. Quentin Jackson was in a triangle choke against Ricardo Arona. and he lifted Arona up into a powerbomb.
That was one of the most famous pride spots.
To knock him out.
Yeah. Quinton used to be a huge Undertaker fan.
Yeah.
And the rumor is that he got out of wrestling because he once met Taker, and Taker basically told him to fuck off.
Yes.
That's the story. We see a top rope choke slam by the Undertaker, and then Nunzio, Chuck Palumbo, and Johnny the Bull run in, the FBI, attacking the Undertaker. This was odd.
It was odd, because it was the FBI. Like, who are they, and how are they associated with this, right?
Yeah, Lesnar capitalized and went for an F5, but it was reversed, and Taker hit the last ride. Then Taker hit a tope over the top rope onto the FBI on the floor for a meaningless SmackDown pay-per-view. This was a big spot for the Undertaker.
He wanted to make the biker chain match memorable.
Nunzio tried to grab the chain, but it was knocked down to the floor by Taker, who then grabbed the chain. But as he grabs it, Vince McMahon comes out and crotches Taker on the top rope. Lesnar grabs the chain, punches Taker in the face with the chain for the win. So I liked how the chain led to the finish, and it was the focal point of that match.
Sure.
So that was good. The bad was that Vince McMahon versus The Undertaker is what came out of this for the Survivor Series the next month.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't do a second match with Lesnar? This was it?
They had done other matches on pay-per-view, but the next pay-per-view was Vince McMahon against The Undertaker.
So was this the blow-off to the Taker and Lesnar thing?
Yeah, that was it.
Really? I think the FBI would be a lot more over today if they were still around.
Really?
Yeah. They could be called GTL.
Jim Tan Laundry. Very good. No. Very good way.
I just got into that show.
Oh, only now?
Only now.
Great, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I can't wait for the second season. I watched the whole thing in like 2 days.
Yeah, I got super into it when it first aired. I've seen all the episodes. It's a great show.
Yeah.
If anyone goes onto my wall, there's a hilarious Jersey Shore UFC parody where they cut it really well.
Yeah, one of our listeners posted it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I think I stole it from there. So there you go. So that was No Mercy Way. I'm going to give this one a 7.5 out of 10. Yeah. I thought it was a good show, and I do not recall Vince and Stephanie getting that kind of reaction. Like, it wasn't a great match, but the reaction was fantastic for that match. It might have been the most heated match on the card. Mm-hmm. Cena and Angle was really good. Mysterio Tajiri was really good. I like the booking of the chain match. I think Undertaker and Lesnar had a really solid Hell in the Cell match, so I've seen them do better together. Mm-hmm. But overall, not a bad show.
Not a bad show.
Especially considering this was one brand.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
7.5 out of 10 for me.
I'd give it the same. I give it 7 or 8. Let's say 7.5 as well. Like you said, all the wrestling in the show was very good to very good, with the Cena and Angle match being the best. However, the backstage skits, terrible. Some of the storylines going into this thing, terrible.
Yeah,
as well.
that was the thing, was the television must have just been dreadful. Like, the in-ring was their strong part, and creative was just not clicking here based on what we saw tonight.
Yeah.
So let's get into the feedback way. There is no shortage of it this week. We'll start off with Richard Lee, who writes, "Hey guys, great job on the Warrior DVD. That led me to hunt down the Observer newsletter that dealt with the Warrior. But getting to that opening promo for a moment, I thought that was the Hulk, crossed over with Christian Bale's Batman voice from the recent movies. And then I remembered it was the Ultimate Warrior, who proved that you don't have to have any talent on the mic to get over. Anyway, I will listen to the No Mercy 03 pay-per-view and remember how bad the branded shows were. Thought it was not as bad as today." So, that was it was a good show, I thought, the pay-per-view.
Yeah. Chris Angler, "I'm really glad you guys called out all the fabricated information on the Warrior DVD, such as Okerlund saying that the ratings on Nitro tanked during Warrior's WCW debut. It's not like they needed to make stuff up to do a hatchet job. WWE's revisionist history always bothers me, since most people will just take the WWE version of events at face value. I won't argue that Warrior's promos were coherent, but the guys they picked to critique them were interesting choices. Hogan's promos were often just as spaced out as Warrior's, talking about things like hanging out in the Garden of Eden with his main squeeze Eve, or Donald Trump and his family hanging onto the Hulkster while he backstroked to safety at WrestleMania 4. Whatever the hell that means. Edge and Christian cut some of the worst promos in history when they're part of the Brood, so at the very least, they're good judges of what bad promos were based on first-hand experience."
Brent Chittenden writes in, "Hey guys, great job on reviewing the Warrior DVD. I watched it streamed online a few months ago and felt that despite the fact that the Warrior is a huge douche, it was really one-sided. I figured I'd just add my 2 cents about the Warrior's comic and website, as I do tend to keep track of all things nerdy. His comic book was drawn in a style that was very 90s. Art-wise, it fit in perfectly with other comics on the rack at the time. Writing-wise, there was no doubt that the Warrior was the actual writer on the series, as it makes less sense than his promos. The series, which lasted 4 issues plus a Christmas special, featured the Warrior and, yup, that's about it. Except for the Christmas issue, which features no words, and has the Warrior beat the crap out of Santa and take over the North Pole. He even puts Santa in bondage gear. We're not sure why, as there is no words to explain this." I want this edition. Warrior's website is just as funny. He's such a right-wing nut job that I pray that his daughters aren't lesbians. Not because I have any problems with those who are gay, but get the feeling from reading his rants that for those two girls, if they were gay, it would be like trying to come out of the closet if the closet was surrounded by sharks being ridden by zombies. But if you learn a few things, like the Warrior has taken up painting, he paints a lot of old Native Americans and Ronald Reagan, and he does commissions. Keep up the good work, guys. My God, wow. The Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, thank you.
The Christmas special. That must be a collector's item there.
I'd just love to see a still frame of the Warrior putting Santa in bondage gear.
And taking over the North Pole.
Yeah. Oh, man. I read a interview with Warrior that happened recently on this Republican website. I mean, he seems very well-spoken. He has a very... He really knows who he is.
Did you watch the video someone posted on the Facebook group this week?
No, I did not. But he seems incredibly passionate about where his political stance is, let's say.
There's no hiding where he stands. No.
Hey, John, from Brendan West. In the Ultimate Warrior DVD at the start, where they talk about Warrior's original name being Dingo Warrior, Bruce Pritchard says that nobody knew what a dingo is. If you did not know what a dingo is, it is a native Australian animal from outback Australia. It is like a wild hog, and they are blonde-colored. Cool. Just thought I'd tell you that because I thought it was interesting.
Yes, this was the message I was noting last week. So there, everyone knows the genesis of the dingo. Power Danielson. No Mercy 2003. Zach Gowen win, Matt Hardy lose, Zach Gowen only one leg, amazing. Matt Hardy now eat too much, he fat Hardy. Why Vince fire Zach? Zach should be superstar, he only one leg, ha ha ha. Vince very bad man, if I see Vince, I smash him.
Okay.
It's powered.
It's his new gimmick.
Yeah, that's his gimmick, okay. He's incoherent and giving up grammar.
Steve Arlowski, good work on the reviews this week. The Warrior review was interesting, and yes, I like listening to other fans bullshit about wrestling. It is more entertaining than the actual shows. I'm still curious about Way's backyard fed name, SMC.
It's taken on a life of its own, Way. The SMC.
Yes, it has.
Ryan Allen Abbott writes, "Hey guys, listen to your review right now. While discussing the Mark Henry spot where he runs into the GM podium, you say that the podium almost went into the crowd. If you go back and look, you will see that Henry, while on the ground, put his hands on the base of the podium to straighten it back up. Fantastic selling by Mr. Henry."
That's right. Ryan's referring to our Raw review.
Yes.
For those of you who are still unaware, John and I are reviewing the current episodes of Raw now every Tuesday.
Yes, go to liveaudiowrestling.com, and we'll also be posting it here on the Facebook group that you can download every Tuesday morning. It's usually posted by noon Eastern.
We got one from Rohan Unrao. "Hey guys, great Warrior review. I can't really say anything about the Warrior burial that hasn't already been said already, but you kept asking why the Brawler still had a job. According to a lot of rumors, he was Pat Patterson's bitch, literally. I posted a video of Kamala singing, and he mentions a very visually disturbing account of Patterson, the Brawler, in a hotel room. Maybe you guys can close the show with it."
Maybe we won't.
Yeah. If I could make a suggestion for a future review, I'd like you guys to review WCW Slamboree 1997, which features such classics as Steve McMichael versus Reggie White and Hall Nash and Six versus Piper Flair and Kevin Green. The awesomeness is just waiting to be unleashed.
Brandon West, the Ultimate Warrior DVD review is great. His promos made me laugh, and you guys made it extra funny. It's unfortunate this whole DVD was set around people from the WWF burying him, although comments from Jim Ross, Bobby Heenan, and Ted DiBiase made me laugh. By the way, Christian made this whole DVD for me. He must have been the biggest Warrior fan as a child if he could recite his promos. Classic review, guys.
Brian Hillhouse, after reviewing the Warrior DVD, you guys should eventually review the McMahon DVD. With the exception of Greg Gagne claiming Vince took their income and livelihood away, it is just one big true-to-form Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. Regarding the Warrior DVD review and wondering how they did the goo, notice that during the interview, Warrior was wearing a jacket and kept one hand in his pocket the entire time. My guess is they ran tubing under the jacket and up through his hair while he pumped the goo via a device in his pocket. Very interesting.
Aram writes in, "Hey John and Way, I love Monday mornings here in Denmark, so I can listen to Review Away. I remember 2003, No Mercy, as the start of the Benoit push and the build-up for Eddie Guerrero and Big Show, where I believe Eddie gave Big Show a bad tortilla so he could crap a lot. Pretty sure that it was something like that. Also, the Athletic Commission was trying to stop Vince and Stephanie before the event because they didn't allow men versus women in a combat of some sort. I was pleased that you didn't review another UFC event. I myself am a huge MMA fan, but the fun is just with reviewing shitty wrestling. My requests are some of the old TNA weekly pay-per-views. I remember one where they brought in an out-of-shape Elvis fan and they called him Disgraceland, who was part of the Sports Entertainment Extreme faction. Anyway, thanks for the countless hours of entertainment. Can't get enough of reviews from you guys. P.S. What is Orlando Jordan up to these days? John, can you please interview Simply the Greatest sometime?" Orlando Jordan's under contract to TNA and not on television.
Nate Milton, "I hate to say it, but I lost a small bit of respect for DiBiase in his interview. As a legend and as a man of God, isn't taking the high road and being forgiving what he's supposed to do? Ted is a smart man. He had to know what the DVD was going to end up being. He had to know that the DVD was going to end up being a burial session. Helwig obviously wasn't perfect, but this business is full of snakes, charlatans, suckers, sissies, racists, and Rudy poos. Is Helwig a saint? Of course not. But is he any worse than guys like Triple H, Jeff Jarrett, or any of the bigoted promoters from the territory days? The fact is, as limited as Warrior was, this man made Vince McMahon a ton of money, and if Warrior was still a marketable commodity, he'd be the guest GM or even the leader of the Nexus."
Oh, I could only pray.
"A name which is as insipid as one of the Warrior's promos. Props to Christian and Y2GZ on the DVD, and a sound. Stop hating to the rest of the participants of the piece." Could you imagine if Warrior was the leader of the Nexus? If Warrior was the GM?
Be must-see television every week. I would love it. It'd be so great. Jack Pisco. "Hey, John and Way, finished listening to the Warrior review. I didn't see the whole DVD, but just enough to agree with your assessment. When WWE decides to revise history on its own ends, in this case making the Ultimate Warrior look crazy, hard to deal with, and being an asshole, it's hard to fight against a machine. I remember the Ultimate Warrior in my youth as one of my favorite wrestlers at the time. He wasn't the best, far from it, but he was captivating to watch promo-wise. There was one thing that caught my eye watching the video, and that was the Triple H segment. His story was interesting, but seeing him holding the heavyweight belt during the interview was funny. Couldn't he have put it down for a moment? On the latest Fight Network radio review of Raw, scathing as always. Keep up the good work, guys. Regal comment about the general manager being Gilligan was hilarious because Michael Cole does resemble him a bit. As for this dilemma about the identity of a limo driver, my take on this is that it is a wrestling MacGuffin. It's a plot device to keep the angle going, but not important enough to explain, like the glowing suitcase in Pulp Fiction."
Very different from the glowing suitcase in Pulp Fiction. Triple H, with the heavyweight belt, I'm assuming that interview was old and from some sort of, maybe from that tape that we reviewed, that China Triple H tape, It's Our Time or My Time.
Yeah, it was likely done at a time when that was somewhat important for the interview.
Padrage, is that right? Padrage?
Well, he'll explain it here.
Oh, here it is. "I basically commented so I could hear how my name would be pronounced. Pawrig, Padrig. Paul Rick and Paul Drick are all close to right. The Raw recap show saves me from having to look at it, so I fully support the product."
That's a big range of pronunciations.
Paul Drick.
Sean Prasad writes in, "Great review on self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. I posted this video a while back of a pretty calm Ultimate Warrior giving his thoughts on getting put into a casket by The Undertaker. Vince's outfit is awesome, and Bobby Heenan is hilarious. P.S. Will you be posting that Evan Bourne interview you did, John? No, would you be able to dig that Evan Bourne interview
yeah.
up?
Yeah, we should
put it up.
All right.
Let's put it up on YouTube.
All right. Andrew Clark. My review of WWE No Mercy 2003. I thought that it was a not bad of a show. The main event of Undertaker and Lesnar was cool. I thought that the father-daughter match was cruel for the father to face her daughter. No kidding. Cena Angle was a classic. APA Basham's was okay. The rest was tolerable. Hope this gets read on RAW. Love the show. I listen every week.
Wow, the five-word review of Raw.
Yeah.
Of No Mercy.
Okay, tolerable. Cruel.
Daniel fucking Markey writes in, hey guys, just listen to Raw Self-Destruction. Great, really enjoyed it. I remember Christian just staring and that really made me a peep, which I still am. Listening to your Monday Night Raw review is great. Keep it up. I, too, would like you two to do some more MMA. Keep up the good work.
He must have been texting this
That's
message.
What it looks like. We don't demand perfection, everybody, yeah. but just a little,
tough
you know,
to,
just,
tough to
just read.
Read
before posting. Yeah.
Ben Breezebaugh, confession time. Until just now, I had never heard of Zach Gowen. What a way to get heels over. Have them berate and beat up a guy with one leg. This message brought to you by McMahon for Senate.
And finally, Shane Mullaney writes in, I thought Edge came across as a prick when mentioning the tassels cutting off the blood to his head. It's not as if Edge is whiter than white. What about the whole Lita-Matt Hardy triangle? The only person that comes across as a sound guy is Christian. Okay, so Shane not happy with Edge's comments to the Ultimate Warrior. That was a lot of feedback this week. So
yeah,
thanks to everybody for posting. You can always go reviewaway.com. That's reviewaway.com. Or just simply go on Facebook and type in Live Audio Wrestling Review Away.
I have a feeling by the time this podcast airs, we will probably be very close to 1,000 members, if not already surpassed.
We're about under 30 to go.
Yeah.
So we're pushing forward to 1,000, and we're trying to come up with something to do for 1,000. We're a little stuck. We have contest block right now.
Yeah. Yeah, but we want to do something special, and I don't think we'll be...
Maybe you could give out the Federation name.
No, you should edit this out.
Why?
I don't... The less we talk about this, the better.
Okay, because that naturally will stop speculation
on
it.
Edit this out.
This is great. This is our best long-term storyline we have on the show. People will keep listening, hoping that one day we'll drop it. We're going to have to hotshot that one.
Maybe I'm making this up. Maybe it's like the GM.
Ooh. So anyway, Wei, we'll close off this show. My choice for next week was kind of inspired by the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD. I thought we could review the, and it is, you know, it is SummerSlam season coming up. We could review the 1991 SummerSlam featuring the match made in hell with Hogan and Warrior, where Hogan was promptly fired after the match, taking on the team of Sergeant Slaughter, Iron Sheik, and General Adnan.
Wow.
And this show also, of course, features the wedding of Randy Savage and Elizabeth and a jailhouse match between the Mountie and the Big Boss Man.
Retro. Classic.
So this should be a fun little review for next week as we do SummerSlam 91. And as we close off, Wei, any tunes you want to finish off the show with?
Any tunes. Rather than go with a song. You pointed this out to me this week. I had not heard it until yesterday. But this Mel Gibson thing, it really is reminiscent of a great heel promo. Let's go out with some of the Mel Gibson rant.
You fucking offend me. And you don't care about anyone but yourself. And your fucking stupid fucking failed career. And it's ruined us. Because you fucking can't get you wanted the dress from, I can't believe you asked for that. And the tickets in the Lakers box, I got rid of the box. And now nobody gets tickets because of you. I had to sell the motherfucker.
Why is it because
of
me?
You.
Why is it because of me? What kind of bullshit is this?
I sold it because of you. I don't have any fucking money. I have to support you and everybody else. I have to sell paintings.
Well, maybe it's because of them. Maybe... Well, maybe it's because of others that you sold it. Why are you blaming it on me?
Did you ask for that when you know what kind of trouble I'm in?
I've never used your box. Never once did I ask you. This is the first time because your relationship with Sasha is so fucked up because of your violence. I was trying to make amends with between you and him. Not make amends, and be a diplomat between you and him.
I tell you that the box is gone because of you.
Not because of me, because you have to feed an army. Why is it because of me? What kind of bullshit is this?
Because I put my goddamn money on you. And my wife knows it's you.
How much money do you spend on me? You don't spend more money on me than anybody else. That's not on me. And that was signed. I was signed to. That was signed to the record label. I always said thank you. I know you doubt me. I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. Okay? I don't want you either. That's it.
That makes it real clear. That was so easy. The minute I pull the plug, you're out of here.
Mel, I'm saving. I cannot be with somebody like this. You don't love me. You don't love me. This is not somebody who loves me. This is some completely off-balance person who absolutely hates me. Why do you hate me so much? What did I do to you? Everything you say about me is bullshit. It's bullshit. It's bullshit, and I only left to save. It's bullshit.
You fucking bitch!
You ruined my life, and you didn't give me a penny.
First, I ruined your life. How did I ruin your life? I gave you shit. You gave me nothing but fucking grief. All right? And bad publicity, you cunt. How did I ruin your life?
You destroyed my reputation, and you're the meanest person I know. You're the meanest person.
What?
You're very mean.
Yeah, you know what mean is now, don't
you? You've always been.
So don't call me mean.
You're very jealous and you're very mean.
Because I like to show you what mean really is. Bitch, cunt, whore, gold digger. All true. You fucking proved it to me. If you're ever interested in proving otherwise, let me know. If you don't care, I know you know what you are too. Look at yourself. And look what you've done. Look what you've fucking done. Look at your son. He's a fucking mess. You fucking excuse for a mother. You're a fucking bitch.
You're the worst father I ever met. Goodbye.